each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in to The Winds Have Changed. I am Father Tom Coyes, grateful to Father Anthony Bush, the wonderful pastor of Stanislaus Kostka here in the heart of Chicago, and the beating pulse of Winds of Change Radio. Today's Wednesday. That means it's brain-wrinkling time once again. And I am just an addict for this thesis that Timothy Gordon, who I've had on a couple of times now, God bless him, I'm just enamored by the thoughtfulness and the detail with which he proposes in a very important way how to save the United States of America from a decline. Yes, we're gonna it begins now, but we're also gonna go back to when it began. In terms of this country, the United States of America, and how and where we find important Catholic nuggets, Catholic principles, and how in too many ways those Catholic nuggets, those Catholic principles have been rejected and are contributing to a malaise, a malady, a sickness, a cancer, whichever we might call it, to our body politic. And we must apply the right ointment. We must apply the right medicine.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Indeed, indeed. And the fullness of Catholicism provides a medicine. And it's a pill that is very difficult to swallow for so many people. But let's dive into. Tim is not with us physically or audibly today. Even when he's on the telephone with a live interview, he's not physically here. He's only here through the means of modern technology, right? But anyways, he's here because I have his book in front of me, Catholic Republic. And he's here because I want to share. I just want to.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
Indeed, indeed. We're going to need a bigger radio show. But we may not need a bigger government. That's one of the things. We may need a smaller government. One of the critical ideas that Timothy Gordon shares with us is that the American government as it is today in our modern times has grown way beyond what the founding fathers figured it would, because the founding fathers figured that it would kind of run smoothly by itself more. You wouldn't have to have national government involved in so many areas. And of course, that is a complaint of many different voices today, that it has grown too large. Not that the answer would be to chop up the United States and make it smaller, although some certainly consider that. Actually, that's what the American Civil War really was proposing, in a sense, the American Civil War was proposing to chop up the large country of the United States, which was only half of what it is really today. Well, two-thirds, because we already had the Louisiana Purchase and everything, but states weren't formed yet. Yeah, there's a, we're always
into Hello there, Peabody here.
Hey, Mr.
Once
Peabody.
Again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
Okay, we're going to have to set it back to, well, 1776, of course, which is the Declaration of Independence, 1789, when the Constitution was ratified, 1860s, when the Civil War was fought, and all sorts of other dates. 1945, 1950, right after World War II, when the Supreme Court of the United States had 7 out of 9 Supreme Court justices that were Masons, and they kicked into high gear some of the mistakes that Timothy Gordon is pointing at, that we can see were small mistakes at the beginning and grew into larger mistakes. But before seeing the mistakes, we could see the virtue and the goodness of the founding. Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you. You just keep listening there, my friend. He comes here. He gets a little confused, but a little bit of time with the winds of change, and your head will be facing the right direction, and your heart will be in the right place. All these things. How about those great cliches? So anyways, if you get my flock notes, you would have received a little message that today's show will be on Catholic origins in the American story. And that itself is somewhat of a provocative thought because to a great extent, I'll say it the way Timothy Gordon says it. He says it so bluntly, but so clearly and powerfully, beautifully. He says, America was founded by Protestant Christians to keep Catholics out. That's a strange, I don't know if many people would be shocked by that thought. Does it seem logical? A lot of modern-day Catholic people, or even non-Catholic, just modern people, wouldn't find that proclamation weird or scandalous because they don't... Well...
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
It is very important to wrinkle our brain here because many people wouldn't find that thought scandalous or hard to swallow because they don't think about history much at all, except like history for most people is what you did last weekend. but when you really want to know the sense of people, when you're trying to look at the big picture, history has to be bigger than that. It has to be bigger than even your lifetime. It has to be bigger. And when we look at America and America's life, you have to look at history even bigger than America's lifeline. That's where Timothy Gordon picks up the beautiful understanding that so many wonderful ideas that were planted in the founding documents, especially the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, these things really would not have come about without earlier great thinkers, and those earlier great thinkers were Catholic. and that's why he throws out the provocative thought that many of the founding fathers plagiarized Catholic thoughts and principles, put them into the American founding while still declaring that they're setting up They want a new country, but particularly to keep Catholicism away from this new experiment That's evidenced over and over again when you hear Protestant American historians speaking about history. There's always the sense that what ruined Europe was Catholicism. It was because Catholicism, corrupt as it was, ruined the society at large. What needed to be done was start a new world over again without Catholicism, and then we'll be just fine. We'll be just fine. But this is always looking for when there is success. Whenever there's an endeavor that has great deal of success, of course, many people clamor to claim cause for the success. Whether it's a baseball team or a business, one way or another, if it's successful, all parties involved like to claim responsibility for the success. But, of course, when it starts to fail, nobody likes to claim responsibility. We like to point fingers out and away from our own responsibility. So that's part of what we're talking about here.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, that's just a lot of wrinkled brain. Let me start with one of the quotes from Timothy Gordon here in the Catholic Republic. He goes, "The great irony is that two American forming camps, which are the Protestant Reformation and the Scientific Enlightenment, rejected precisely the element in Catholicism that America would require in order to thrive as a republic." Okay? So let me chew on that for a second. At the founding of the United States of America, there were two major movements afoot in the world, and this is why history has to look beyond your own history, and the history of America has to be situated within the history of the world. And of course, what happened before 1776 was the Protestant Reformation, and the you could use the term Enlightenment generally, but I like to call it the Scientific Enlightenment, because we think of the Enlightenment. It is true that you could say that some of the Enlightenment was very philosophical, very in the world of literature and art and what have you. But primarily speaking, we're talking about the Enlightenment in terms of scientific achievements. And scientific discoveries and scientists who felt they had to become atheists or at least agnostics in order to be good scientists. Ooh, this would be a good little time for me to remind all my listener friends that coming Saturday, May 11th, let's see, that's not this Saturday. Coming Saturday, May 11th, at St. James of the Sag Church, we're going to have one of the professors from Notre Dame University with us, Chris Baglaw. Yeah, very good. Chris Baglaw of ND fame is going to be with us, and he's going to be talking on the topic of science and faith and how he sees the relationship between the two needs to be rehabilitated. So this is right up what Timothy Gordon is touching on too, because the Protestant Reformation, obviously, with the attempt on the part of many Protestants and many filled with the good intentions of trying to purify the immorality found in and around the Catholic Church, evolved or devolved into a system of Christianity, which unfortunately promoted more immorality. That's one way to put it. The scientific enlightenment being inspired by Catholicism, because only through a sense of order in the universe can scientific inquiry be possible. You're not going to study the stars. You're not going to study the human body. You're not going to study plants and biology and chemistry and all the rest if you think there's no order in the universe, if nature doesn't have a form in the sense that it's a continuing reality. In other words, if you study water today and you come up with these great discoveries about it, namely steam or ice, or let us say study iron and mercury or anything else wonderful science has tackled. But if you think you're studying that particular aspect of matter today, but next week it's going to be something very different, whoa, you're going to waste your time.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
It's important to wrinkle your brain here. So that's we have to appreciate what Timothy Gordon is trying to get us to open our minds and our hearts to, is the importance of Catholic principles within America, how America has rejected in a large extent these things, which has caused for the downfall, and Protestantism and scientificism, continuation, shall we say, secular scientists, atheistic scientists, cannot, will not save the day. So, but we'll take a little break here, and we're going to continue and get more into it. I particularly want to get to how James Madison, in a kind of a schizophrenic way, we're going to praise him and blame him. Okay, well, we'll be right back. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
The Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change.
On AM 750, WNDZ, and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
This is Bold Talk with Father Thomas Loyola.
We live in strange times, full of contradictions, many of which we create and then force upon ourselves. An example.
To hear the rest of this and other Bold Talks with Father Thomas Loyola, visit taberlife.org and go to the main menu and click subscribe.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Coyes here, ready to wrinkle your brain a little bit. I brought along one another little, this is a different little clip that seems to be appropriate. We'll show you. I'm not only going to show you the money, I'm going to show you the payoff. I'm going to show you how important things are here. We're talking about, I'm reading a number of selections from Timothy Gordon's book, Catholic Republic, because I just think it's so pivotal, and it's such a great insight into, it's a different kind of apologetics. Even mentions that in his introduction. And it took me a while for me to realize what he was saying there, but it's beautiful. When we think of apologetics, those who like to study their faith and dialogue with other people of different faiths and try to help get deeper into the truth of the matter. And that's not everybody. Some people like to talk about religion, not to find a truth, but just to prove their point or defend your position, as it were, which is natural and a good part of talking about religion. But we really have to be open to discovering and finding the truth, and we should be nervous, or we should be unquiet. We should be restless. There's a good word. We should be restless until we discover that great, great truth that is not filled with doubts, the certainty about which we can truly assent to. But here's a little song that reminds me of the situation here today. Let's see if you can remember this, because notice I'm gonna say Chicago just had a election of a new mayor, and the fact that the new mayor is a person who has a radically non-Christian understanding of human love, i.e. marriage, I think this is a good song that we can say. Remember this one?
I heard my mama cry. I heard her pray the night Chicago died. Brother, what a night the people saw. Brother, what a fight the people saw. Yes, indeed.
Couldn't resist that one. The Night Chicago Died, that's a song from the old 70s. Some of you younger folks might not remember that one, but I thought of that in terms of the election of a mayor whose understanding of marriage is so anti-Christian, and the fact that so many Christian voters didn't seem to worry about that. It really is. It's a historical moment in the life of a metropolis, a city-state, and you could say a nation like ours. It doesn't have to be just focused on Chicago, of course, because the Supreme Court decision a few years back sort of wiped away the any state's ability to prohibit that kind of perverted understanding of marriage. Now, I could just hear, if I had a call-in show, the phone board would be lighting up, and I'll address that right away, even though we don't have calls in right now. They would be easily saying, listen how the priest foments hate. I know that's what a great many people will say. To speak against same-sex marriage is to be a hater. Whereas I would say what is really the attitude about hate is when the full good of another is ignored, and therefore those who are would attack me for promoting the idea of marriage as between a man and a woman, that they're expounding a kind of hatred that is even deeper, even though I won't admit that mine is hatred. It may be negativity towards a moral position, but I don't want to call it hatred, because my love pushes me to guide people to true love and the true meaning of human life.
Oh, no.
Yeah. That's what it is. So let's go back. The reason I brought this issue up, and with the Night Chicago Died, and the degradation or the breaking of the bond of the incredibly long tradition a marriage being between a man and a woman, is because it gets to the center of what Timothy Gordon is saying, which was part of the importance of the founding principles of the America, namely a natural law view of right and wrong. a sense of virtue in the people that didn't contradict nature, but allowed nature to teach us in important ways, insofar as even when the Bible was silent. The problem with gay marriage in terms of the Bible is that, of course, there are passages in the Bible that speak very clearly in opposition to gay marriage. But many people who defend gay marriage use the Bible almost as equally and point to passages regarding not being judgmental, regarding forgiving others, et cetera. Just the general spirit of compassion and mercy that is found in the Bible. So many people use the Bible to promote same-sex marriage, just as many people use the Bible to criticize same-sex marriage. That falls right into the hand of what Timothy Gordon is trying to share with us, because he's saying just using the Bible is not enough. There is something called natural law. Nature teaches as well as the Bible teaches, and that was one of the It's a beautiful way to describe the gripe that the Pope had with Martin Luther when talking about the Reformation. When the Pope says your belief about sola scriptura, show me in the Bible or I won't believe you, it's kind of where the rubber hit the road when the Pope, the Church, and then in the person of the Pope said, no, you can't dismiss the authority of the Church, which is interpreting reality, interpreting truth, interpreting goodness and badness, the revelation of God, with the Bible, but also extra biblical reasoning. And that extra biblical reasoning is a good way of pointing to natural law. And as a matter of fact, I got to play this one too. Do I have it here? This was, many of you know who listen to my show, know that I do like Dennis Prager, who's on the radio on a national syndicated program. He is, of course, a Jewish thinker, very open to Christianity in the sense that he's open to the good virtues that Christianity has. He's speaking about the importance of God in terms of discovering any morality. And he says, without a belief in God, you're going to fall into moral relativism. And he says, a caller comes in, and I don't think he's actually, he's just reading what the caller says on his screen, so we're not going to hear the caller's voice, but Dennis Prager is, in responding to the atheistic conservative, he calls himself an atheistic conservative who believes you can be good without God. Dennis Prager responds to him in a very Catholic way. See if you can figure this out. This is how the call
James
went.
James in Louisville is a conservative atheist, says morality can be based on human experience, not just the Bible. Well, if that's, yes, I agree, not just the Bible. We have to use reason. I couldn't agree more. But without the Bible, we wouldn't have what James, the conservative atheist, loves about America, being a conservative. Intellectual honesty demands that we understand that the founders of this country were rooted in that book, including Franklin and Jefferson.
Yes. Can you see how this Jewish commentator is spewing forth Catholic wisdom in response. And you say, well, how do you mean? What do you mean by that? He's spewing forth Catholic wisdom because he's trying to point to natural law. He says you must use human reason, not just the Bible. That's what Catholicism was trying to say to Martin Luther and the Protestant reformers, and using human reason to especially come to moral principles. And I'm going to go as far as this, and this is what's so challenging and so ignored in our world and our debates today. The centerpiece of natural law, my faithful listeners, what might you guess would be my answer to the question, what is the centerpiece of natural law? From a humanist point, from a politician, a political point of view, or from a religious point of view? What might be the centerpiece of natural law? What is the highest part of nature? And if you're going to call it a creation, who is the highest creature? And what is one of, if not the highest aspects of that creature? Well, I'll answer that question for you. Do you want me to do that? Sure. I know you did. The centerpiece of natural law is marriage. The centerpiece of natural law, what does thinking about marriage rationally give to us? Using the Bible, we can certainly use the Bible, but even without using the Bible, you can come to so many conclusions that it is better for children that their parents stay together. It is better for society that couples have children rather than not have children. It is certainly obvious to see that if parents bump off their offspring, as we are doing in such great quantities through abortion, there is an attack against natural law, etc. So Dennis Prager, Dennis Prager is trying to make a point for the need of reverence and respect for the God of the Bible in order for not only American civilization to survive, but generally Western civilization in general to survive. And, you know, President Trump even alluded to that. He's mentioned it a few times, but one of the speeches I remember he gave in Europe, I think, pretty sure it was in Poland, where he said the future of Western civilization needs Christianity, that the essence of Western civilization can't endure without Christianity. And so, of course, he wasn't speaking as a theologian there, and of course he's not Catholic, but what he's saying there is very Catholic in the sense that what is the fullness of Christianity is not just what does the Bible tell me. And that's one of the aspects of Timothy Gordon's thesis here. Let me keep going here a little bit, okay? We're going to go, let me see, where did I leave off? He calls America schizophrenic at this point. The schizophrenic American reception of Catholic natural law is the heart of his thesis. The schizophrenic American reception of canon law. Why does he call it schizophrenic reception? Because the founding fathers, especially like Adams, Madison, Hamilton, Jefferson, we'll stick with those four pillars. They all knew that you had to have a virtuous populace in order to break away from a authoritarian king. The need for an authoritarian king was built on the premise that the populace would not be virtuous without sort of the authority looking over them. It sounds weird to our American ears, but you can see how logical that thought is whenever we drive down the expressway and we wonder about following the speed limit. We will do what we have to do within the limits of the authority looking over our shoulders. You see what I'm saying? Obviously, we'll go as fast as we can without getting pulled over, but it's the need for the police to pull us over to keep us going the right speed, which is parallel to the need for a king to pull over the populace and say, you're going wrong.
Okay, this way, show's or that over. Way. Nothing to see here. Show's yep. Oh, my God! A horrible plane crash! Yep. Hey, everybody, get a load of this flaming wreckage! Come on, crowd around! Crowd around, don't be shy, crowd around.
Okay, well, the show's not over, Nick, but there is a plane crash that we're contemplating here, and the wreckage is the destruction of the beautiful Catholic principles that were put in America at its founding, but have been lost, and the fact that the founders didn't want to give credit where credit is due is something that we have to. Assess today. I've used this term in other radio shows
My
before.
Lord, such destruction.
Well, the destruction is our country, and if we don't give it the right medicine, it'll be worse destruction. If you get my drift, see what I'm saying. And so the concept of that natural law, the virtuous citizen, has to be maintained throughout the history of America. But because there were certain elements that the founding fathers put Catholic principles in the founding documents, but they schizophrenically called America a Protestant nation founded to keep Catholics out. Sad to say, but it's just an important way. And by saying that to you, I have to...
you just wrinkle my brain, man.
By saying that, I have to remind you of one of the themes that I often have addressed before, and that is holy forgetfulness and unholy forgetfulness. Do you remember that? This is where I need all you listeners. I'm gonna tell you that this is a dirty little secret of our past. And first I have to tell you it so that you can see it, accept it, believe it. Then I got to ask you to holily forget it with a spirit of holiness, because once you find something bad about the past, you're gonna wanna knock some heads together. That's not what we need at this time. So the dirty little secret that America was formed to keep Catholics out is a truism, but we need to operate with a holy forgetfulness. There is there's two different kinds of holiness, forgetfulness, right? There's unholy forgetfulness is like I forgot your birthday. Or I forgot I had to go to work today. That's unholy forgetfulness. But there's a holy forgetfulness when we say something like, ooh, I'm glad you forgot. What do you mean? Well, I'm glad you forgot that I'm the one who stole your girlfriend. If you're reading so. Or I'm glad you forgot that I didn't pay you $100 that I owe you. So this whole topic falls in the category of holy forgetfulness, because we need to see things about history, but then operate not with a grudge or not with a payback attitude, but with a desire to correct and recover a goodness lost. So anyways, hey, let's take another break real quick. I got to come back to that James Madison point that I was trying to talk about before. So I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stan's School has an amazing PK 3 through 8th grade program focused on leadership and social-emotional learning, and is one of the only schools to implement the Reading and Writing Project of Columbia University and the University of Chicago. Everyday math across the board, PK 3 through 8th, is taught by our highly educated and dedicated teachers. St. Stan's students are academically challenged with advanced-level placement opportunities as their test scores and high school admissions speak volumes. St. Stan's is an integral part of the Wicker Park community, where you feel welcome and at home with other families and friends who enjoy the same warm, friendly, and safe atmosphere for their children. We have small classroom size, which makes a difference in the whole learning experience. Many schools have excellent programs. At St. Stan's, we empower students to be excellent. Join the St. Stan's family. It is a selective admissions process. Grades 1 through 8 are tested and interviewed. Call 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. Or stop by at 1255 North Noble Street. That's one block north of Division, just off the Kennedy. More information at ststanschicago.org. That's ststanschicago.org.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Do you have loved ones who are away from the church? Do you feel helpless, anxious, or concerned because people you love no longer consider themselves Catholic? My name is Sister Teresa Alethea Noble. I am a religious sister with the Daughters of St. Paul, but I am also a former atheist. I was raised Catholic but rejected my faith for over 10 years. Evangelizing our friends and family is the most difficult kind of evangelization, but it is possible. I have written a book called The Prodigal You Love, Inviting Loved Ones Back to the Church, to help you invite your loved ones back to the church. You can find more information about this book at pauline.org/prodigalyoulove. Together, let's start an evangelization revolution.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for being with me. I'm Father Tom Coyes, trying to wrinkle your brain. I'm in the midst of explaining, trying to share with you a dirty secret of our American culture that I want you to appreciate, I want you to accept, I want you to understand its breadth and its depth and its importance, but then I want you to forget it. In the sense that sometimes when you discover someone did you wrong, that you're not going to take revenge or you're not going to try to punch them out, as it were, because maybe the phrase of Jesus is a good one to recall to mind here. Forgive them, for they don't know what they were doing. They didn't know what they were doing. Now we can see a mistake. One of the principles is the incorporation of an idea of natural law, which is morality reason to without the Bible. And the United States wanted to exercise its life, its society without I almost said it wanted to exercise its life without the Bible, but it did want to keep the Bible in. But it didn't. But it also, in this schizophrenic way, said you can believe whatever you want to believe about the Bible, and no one's going to interfere with interpreting or changing your interpretation from the next person's interpretation, which is the heart and soul of Protestantism, really. So there's this aspect of natural law that was put into the founding fathers, but has been summarily ruined because the natural rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness have been transformed. That's a big word today. We use that word transform. America's being transformed, and actually, our Catholic Archdiocese here had a reform program or a renewal program called Parish Transformation. I think those who pitched that Parish Transformation program thought it was a good word. I felt it was a bad word because it was too ambiguous, and it reminded me too much of the Reformation, quite frankly. What transformation are we talking about? And it was big on feeling, or it was big on symbolism, but small in material and content. So the another aspect beside the natural law idea, morality, gained through natural wisdom, reflecting on on human nature, is, and another one is the principle of subsidiarity. The principle of subsidiarity was also written into the early founding fathers, the documents of the early founding fathers, but it has since been blown out of the water as well. And you don't necessarily think about, well, the principle of subsidiarity is also a difficult one to get your head around. It primarily means a chain of command in a certain sense, right? Or a hierarchy of authorities, or a hierarchy of loyalties. I like it that way. When Timothy Gordon is talking about how subsidiarity is a Catholic concept, because the Catholic Church wants the family to be an authority, the mother and father, the Catholic Church wants mother and father to be an authority over their own family, but then when issues arise that are inter-family wise, you got competing fathers involved, so there has to be a sense of authority above any of the individual fathers. That's the sense of subsidiarity that Catholic Church has, and it's always had. And that's this is the meaning behind my sculpture that I talk about and I refer to quite often here on Winds of Change. Some of you know me. Some of you have seen my little sculpture that I bring out every now and then. It's a sculpture of seven circles, seven rings attached at the top by one cord, the one cord representing our individual relationship with Almighty God, who himself is three persons in one, a community itself. And then our sense of loyalties, our sense of family keep growing bigger. And yet there needs to be a consistent ethics. There needs to be a consistent moral objective truth that all of the layers, no matter how big the layers get, all have to abide by. So in other words, stealing is wrong for the individual. You grow to the loyalty of a marriage, and stealing from your spouse is wrong. You grow to the level of a nuclear family, and stealing between siblings, or stealing children stealing things from their parents is wrong. Parents stealing things from their children is wrong. Of course, the concept of private property of children, especially when they're small, is indeed something quite odd. The parent who gives their five-year-old $5 to go buy a toy for themselves, and now the the toy is being used by the child, and when the child is disobeying the parent takes away the toy from the child. The child doesn't rightfully say, you can't steal that from me, that's mine. Anyways, that's a little off topic. But as you get bigger, national-wise, internationally, and universally, those are the seven layers of my little sculpture. I have to do with the seven concepts of fatherhood and the seven loyalties, the seven concepts of family that bind us. A big step goes from the biological family to the national family. But I'm using that concept, especially trying to tie in the wonderful thoughts of Dr. Scott Hahn, the great Presbyterian convert to Catholicism. He analyzes, and he oftentimes calls his own special brand of doing theology, covenantal theology. So he talks about these seven layers of covenants that go about, and the loyalty or the covenant that exists within the biological family is right below the covenant of the tribe, or shall we say the extended family. And we could say that's a smaller community. We can call that the parish. We can call that the committee whatever small branch of government jurisdiction. You can say the county. We'll say the county. And then biblically speaking, after the tribes are united, they're united around a nation with Moses as their leader. So anyhow, here's subsidiarity. And with a little bit of time left, we got to see this important problem that James Madison is responsible for. Here we go. Let me see. Let me just pick up here. Subsidiarity is more robust than federalism because its rendition of local rule operates upon liberty, whereas federalism's version of local rule operates upon license. Now, there's a mouthful. Subsidiarity, the Catholic principle that authority is supposed to be layered, shall we say. You and the family get to have your authority over things that are specifically and directly and uniquely involving your family. But those issues that involve more than just your family, which is basically what so many of the political laws that we have to enact deal with, such as taxes, of course, for schools or for infrastructure and building bridges and all the rest. No individual family is equipped to do that. But he's comparing subsidiarity in a Catholic sense to federalism in the American sense, where federalism was a way of trying to tie the states together while giving the states their own autonomy. So let me read a little bit further. Again, the misunderstood nature of American subsidiarity, what we're calling federalism, like expressed by James Madison especially, and codified within our Constitution, led to its eventual degradation and forfeiture. Only the Catholic natural law can sustain a methodological liberty that does not immediately disintegrate like a counterfeit handbag. Let me see if I can unpack that and break that down for you, because it's a very insightful thing. The American experiment established with this, that obviously anybody who's a student of American history will realize that that part of the difficulty of making America at the beginning was, how do you make a nation out of 13 states that all wanted to be independent? And to form a nation, each state had to give up a certain amount of autonomy. So the concept of federalism was pitched, and obviously eventually won, because we are a nation. Many folks particularly someone like Thomas Jefferson, who of course was president, second president of the United States, was always very skeptical about giving the federal government more power. He thought it should be as small as possible. And that was a great debate of those founding fathers, because some said, well, there are a lot of issues that must be discussed and agreed with together. We can't all have 13 opinions about the financial system. That's why and Alexander Hamilton, being the first treasurer of the United States, saw that a nation with 13 different dollars, of course, they would call them different things. Like in Mexico, we call money units pesos, or everywhere else, different things. So would we have a nation if we had 13 different currencies? Alexander Hamilton didn't think so. So let me go on here a little bit. So what Timothy Gordon is trying to establish here at the outset is how the constitutional liberty and subsidiarity in America were perverted culturally and legally by the faulty interpretation of its Protestant and scientific Enlightenment framers. In assessing American federalism and subsidiarity, we shall examine the confounded Protestant Enlightenment sense of liberty actually guaranteed by the Constitution in 1788. Recall how the Protestant Enlightenment marriage, shall we say, rejects the concept entirely, but thereafter seeks to benefit from American liberties through the unjustified and one-sided enjoyment of personal freedoms. What's he saying there? He's we're trying to have our cake and eat it too. In other words, he's pointing out a flaw in that founding by saying anyone can decide what is right and wrong for themselves.
Wow.
But we need...
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, that is a brain wrinkle. But we need a virtuous society for us to hang together. So this great difference, true liberty, which is opposed to license. Please, my friends, keep those terms in mind, because liberty is used so often as a great virtue. And it is. Of course it is. It must be maintained as a virtue. True liberty must be distinguished from what is pitched as liberty today, and we need it's so unlike true liberty that it has to have a different name, and we use the name license. So true liberty, unlike license, carries onerous burden as well as enjoyable benefits. If our society is to exercise true liberty, it has to recognize the burdens it places upon its people. True republics, Timothy Gordon continues, must arrange liberty such that household fathers and mothers shoulder the moral and religious enculturation of their children. This is the one true connection between the Catholic natural laws, liberty, and subsidiarity. To explain this concept, we must firstly ask what true constitutions actually accomplish. Oh, dear. And so James Madison, by pushing the states' rights to the extent that he did, allowed an evil principle to enter into his otherwise great plan. We're going to have to come back to this, as I always say at the end of this wonderful hour, but you've been listening to Father Tom Coy's listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deep for truth or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter
such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now.